Good morning. It's Sunday, June 3rd, 2018, and you are listening to In the Wheelhouse. ITW is a weekly podcast on the Chicago Cubs and other ancillary topics. I'm Tom Hockney.
And I'm Leo Fontana. This week on ITW, we look at the NL Central's dominance over the American League Central and interleague play. We go around the horn with the latest MLB news. And finally, we cover off on the week that was. Tom, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, partly cloudy, about 77%.
I played in the Lake County American Pool Player Association regional finals, and I won two matches, but my team failed to advance, and we missed out on our chance to go to Las Vegas. So,
wow.
Kind of a disappointing. It was bittersweet. I played well, and but the team did not. And that's just the way it goes.
So I have a question. So the going to the Vegas part, is that funded much like a bowling league would be, and your fees kind of pay for that?
Right, exactly. The fees pay for that. I mean, if we had won, we would have gotten prize money that would have helped us pay for our flights and hotels in Las Vegas. And then we would probably get a discount on a hotel, that sort of thing.
So in your last game, this two that you won, didn't you try to do a fast Eddie and try to double down on the none of that stuff?
No, none of that stuff. I mean, we won our first round and then we lost our second round. You know what I mean? So, you know, but it was good. I had a great time. I mean, you know, you're playing with a bunch of people you don't know. It's a lot of fun. So,
sure.
All right. So let's get into why we're here and let's go around the league. And I want to talk specifically about how the National League Central is really kicking the ass of the American League Central in interleague play. And if you look at the White Sox have improved with a win Friday night. They've improved to 2-10.
I know.
Versus, it's not good. And I don't know. This is really, I think, going to help. Number one, it's going to help the National League Central get one or maybe even two wild card teams. And I think it really hurts some of the other divisions, National League East and the National League West, who have to play tougher divisions in the American
League. Well, when you actually compare both leagues, the National League Central is better than the American League Central on paper. The American League Central has Cleveland and really a bunch of bad teams. It's interesting, the National League's Central's record is 24-15 overall, and it's buoyed really by the Pittsburgh Pirates, who are 10-2 against the American League Central. The rest of the teams, including the Cubs and the Brewers and the Cardinals, the three main teams of the National League Central, are above 500, but not by much. And the fact is, we need the White Sox to beat the Brewers, and we certainly need them to beat them today.
We really do. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's been really hard to watch that, and it hasn't helped the Cubs at all.
Right.
So, but the White Sox did come back to beat the Brewers on Friday, and this was kind of interesting because, in addition to being a nice win for the White Sox, it was Danny Farquad came back to throw out the first pitch, and as many of you probably know, Danny Farquad, he had I wouldn't say he had a stroke, but he had bleeding in the brain on the bench. Was rushed to the hospital and was able to get emergency surgery. And so the fact that he's even able to come back and throw out the first pitch was amazing. And it was really a nice moment. They had the entire team stand behind him as he threw out the first pitch to Nate Jones. You know, his family was there with him. And it goes to show that even a really bad team can have a really nice
There's
moment.
There's no doubt about that. And the amazing thing is that hemorrhage was basically a month ago. And so, as you pointed out last week, and I think you're absolutely correct, there is kind of some differences, differencing in opinions on what his baseball future looks like. But I think most physicians would tell you that he's done pitching at the major league level.
Yeah.
I think Danny has a different idea on this. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, because he had a life-threatening injury. In fact, to put it more bluntly, had there not been medical personnel in the Sox dugout, he would have died.
Absolutely.
So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, you have this athlete mentality. And as you know, and as you pointed out last week about Farquhar, he's great with analytics, and most likely the Sox would be wise to put him into some type of an office role with the Sox. Yeah. I just think Danny has a different idea. So it'll be interesting to see how this kind of plays out, but everyone's rooting for him for sure.
Absolutely. All right. So we'll pivot to the St. Louis Cardinals. And I read earlier this week that St. Louis Cardinals catchers have yet to throw out a runner stealing a base this season. Teams are 20 for 20 in stolen bases. Molina, 0 for 7. He's not responsible for the larger part of this sort of deficit. But it's interesting that, this is not good for the St. Louis Cardinals.
For the last two or three seasons, the Cardinals have been really poor on defense. Last year, they were one of the worst. I think they may have been the worst team in the Central outside of the Reds as far as their defensive performance. So this is kind of troubling information. But, as you mentioned, Molina's 0 for 7. And to me, that's kind of the bellwether here for the Cardinals. For the longest time, I've been saying that the Cardinals are the Cubs, toughest opponent in the Central. I'm starting to shift and pivot myself towards the Milwaukee Brewers, because the fact of the matter is the Cardinals have other issues. Marcell Ozuna is the guy they paid big money for that guy to come over last year from, I think.
Well, big prospects. Didn't they, or they traded for him, or did they?
No, yeah, they but I'm saying they, yeah, they paid him handsomely, and he's basically batting .250. So they've got issues. The Brewers have issues either too. It's not that the Brewers are clear cut, because as it was pointed out, I don't know if you watched the Cubs game yesterday. It was a National Fox game, and Smoltz certainly pointed out the Brewers need another starter. And as you and I talked about all last year, it was inexplicable that they got to the break and sat on their hands. And if they do that again this year, if I was a Brewer fan, I would kind of wash my hands with the team, because obviously last year in the second half, they had serious injuries to their pitching staff. And I think that they are on the cusp of being a serious playoff team. They have the best record in the National League, and they need to act at the halfway point. If they don't, I'll be pleased as a Cubs fan, but as a baseball fan, I don't understand what they're doing holding on to their prospects like that.
You're right. You're right. So also around MLB, we've had a lot of injuries. Clayton Kershaw is out, and his velocity is down. And you were saying that his best days are probably behind.
Well, that's what a lot of the scouts are saying. He's had such an extraordinary first 10 years. I mean, it's almost Sandy Koufax-like. It's entirely possible that his issues could be physically related, meaning that his back issues, which again popped him back on the 10-day DL, could be contributing to the loss of velocity. However, if you break down his velocity over the last two or three seasons, it's slowly declining, as you see with a lot of power pitchers. You saw this, I think, to a certain extent with Arrieta last year. He struggled to rebound towards his Cy Young level. And I think with Kershaw, you're looking at a once-in-a-generation thoroughbred pitcher. And to me, it's always sad when I see pitchers like this start to lose it. Now, hopefully I'm wrong. If he's able to rebound health-wise, Kershaw still has an incredible slider. But what they're saying is that his 94, 95-mile-an-hour routine velocity is now 87, 88, and that's a significant drop. Speaking of IRs, I wanted to bring up Josh Donaldson on the Toronto Blue Jays, who's back on the IR, DL, I should say. This guy's a very expensive piece to Toronto's mediocre team, and he's actually kind of becoming somewhat of an anchor after having two or three years of tremendous production, including an MVP season about three or four years ago. He's been down tremendously, but mostly it's because he can't stay healthy. And so it's just interesting that, Donaldson was a 35-40 home run guy, and maybe those days behind him as well. But the point is Toronto would be sitting on a really large contract.
That's true. All right, so moving on. Tampa Bay Rays outfielder Carlos Gomez thinks that the drug testing done by MLB, it's not random, that it targets older players and it targets Latino players. Do you agree?
Yeah, I suppose that it there's an appearance of that. But as we've talked about throughout the season, in my theory on the guys taking performance-enhancing drugs today is twofold. A, it is the marginal players in the minor leagues who need it to make it to the major league level. And I think that when you talk about some of the South American countries where the medical assistance is not as regulated as it is here in the States, I think you see certain availabilities and behaviors, I guess, that you may not see in other parts of North America. I'm not exactly sure. That's just a theory that I have, because I know that a couple of players, and Sosa comes to mind, you know, where yeah, they caught yeah. him with, you know, suitcases full of stuff prior to trying to enter into the United States. And I guess I would just say, why? How is that happening? Where are you getting it from? This is basically, at least in the States, it's a regulated substance. It's not, you can't just go to a drugstore and buy it. So there has to be some, you know, there's some folks that are being complicit in this. So he may be right and wrong at the same time, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, I think, you know, you have these academies in the Dominican Republic that major league teams have, and there's just such pressure for a lot of these guys to get a major league contract to really hang on. Because a lot of these guys, you know, they don't get the chance, you know, they're in these camps and they basically get till they're 18 to prove that they can stick, and then they're out.
Right.
And so there's a lot of pressure for them to succeed, and, you know, their families are depending on them succeeding. So I think they'll do whatever it takes to succeed. And I think that this is kind of the situation. I wouldn't necessarily say it's a conspiracy to target them. I just think that the situation is such that, you know, these players are basically forced into making these decisions, and it's not good. You know, as far as older players, I think there's pressure on them to kind of hang around too, and to continue making money. And it's definitely trended. The game has trended towards younger players
And Latin players too. So it would normally skew that way anyway. So you're 100% right. But remember, it takes two to tango. These people aren't being injected against their will. So
yeah, that's true too.
So I wanted to bring up something that was very interesting and almost magical that occurred in the major leagues this past Wednesday in Detroit at Comerica Park. Mm-hmm. There was a large goose, presumably a Canadian goose, kind of running around the field. And as we've seen many times when Major League Baseball has tried to herd cats or squirrels or other animals, and they haven't been all that successful. And so this poor goose was struggling to get lift to fly out. And was being chased by all the personnel on the field. Well, finally, this goose was able to kind of get enough elevation, and it was able to take off, and it proceeded to crash right into the scoreboard and fell into the seats. Fortunately for this goose, there was a veterinary doctor that was right there in the section there and was able to take this goose. Obviously, they took it out of the stadium and took it to a hospital to make sure it was okay, which it was. The only thing, you know, as my mother used to say, when you fell, the first thing to go is your pride. I think that's the only thing that the goose was injured. But I'm happy to report that the goose is safe and sound. And based on, you know, the exit interview, he turns out he's not really a baseball fan.
That's true too. Yeah, that was funny. She actually picked
right, correct,
him up,
correct.
Which I thought was
but
crazy,
that was a vet doctor.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that aspect of
right.
it. But I'm not crazy about Canadian geese anyway. They're kind of
me too.
So, all right. So moving on, let's talk about the Chicago
Cubs.
You know, they've had, they're on a really nice stretch. You know, last week they took 2 or 3 from the Giants. They took 2 or 3 from Pittsburgh. And they've won 3 out of 4 against the New York Mets. They'll play them again today. just a lot of great things going on. And I want to begin with sort of the drama that took place on the base paths in Pittsburgh. And this was enough base running drama to last us for
almost the whole season, really.
Yeah, really, yeah. But, you know, Rizzo slides in to home plate on a force play, and he takes out the catcher, what's his name, Diaz, right?
Yep.
And Diaz made a terrible throw as a result. You know, he made a terrible throw to first, and the Cubs were able to score two runs. Now, I don't think it affected the outcome of the game. The Cubs had a 5-0 lead at that point. But, you know, Clint Hurdle comes out, and they argue, and they review it, and they have to send it back to New York. And then, you know, the voice from above says, you know, no, it was a clean slide. No, you know, no harm, no foul. So, so then, you know, it just becomes this, it just snowballs into this sort of controversy, because now the umpires in New York rule that the slide did not violate the rules, but then Major League Baseball reviewed it and said that it did, and that he should have been called out, or the runner at first should have been called out. So I don't know. I mean, it really kind of ruffled Joe Madden's feathers.
Well, you know, this is another one of those situations where baseball is doing its best to, I guess, try to clean up these types of issues in the modern game of baseball. In the old days, this was a non-event. It was nothing was illegal.
This is how they play. This is how
you go back to the beginning days of baseball when Ty Cobb actually sharpened his spikes, and actually when he slid with his left foot up on purpose to injure players. And then if you kind of fast forward to 1987, there was 2 weeks left in the regular season, and Detroit Tiger great in his final season in Detroit, Kirk Gibson, actually took out Tony Fernandez, the shortstop for the Toronto Blue Jays, with 2 weeks left in the season. Fernandez was having almost an MVP season and was an integral cog in the Toronto Blue Jays' run to win the
success,
division.
Yeah.
Gibson takes him out on a slide. Fernandez basically never was the same player after that. Toronto lost the division to the Tigers on the last day of the season. And so you kind of fast forward today, there's been numerous instances where players have been injured. The Buster Posey comes to mind, where, you know, he has a, you know, basically the catcher is a sitting duck. I have mixed feelings about it. I kind of think that it should be all bets are off, and they should, that, you know, it within reason, you can't go out of the base pass to attack a player, but I kind of like the old system, and the reason is because the catcher knows what he's signing up for. You have the, you know, you can get the hell out of the way. You have that option. So, but I could also see where baseball thinks as though that there should be, you know, clear-cut rules. But to me, it's too gray. It should be clear-cut. You cannot touch the player, and if you touch the player, you're out of the game, or some rule like that, or otherwise go back to the Wild West. I don't know.
Yeah, no, you're right. And it's the lack of clarity that really upsets people, especially Joe Madden. And then this was exacerbated by the next night when Brent Musgrove slid into second base and flipped Javi
Baez. That was blatant. That was blatant.
I see. But again, I mean, I think it's two of the same thing. And he's, again, trying to prevent the other team from completing a double play. And then all the bench is empty, and it becomes a whole, you know, just a whole scene. And Joe Madden had a great line. He was talking about how everybody's pairing
up.
And he said he wanted Camaro Martin, the first base coach for Pittsburgh. But Chili Davis stepped in the way. And I just loved it. The other thing that's ironic is that if you go back to the Rizzo slide, you know, Clint Hurdle complained in high heaven about this. But Clint Hurdle is such the old school baseball guy, and he's the one complaining the loudest.
Well,
so I don't know.
Clint Hurdle's a little crying bitch, too. I'm just going to say that right now. I think he's alienated everybody except, you know, the Pirate fan base and the Pirates themselves. He's got like a little Billy Martin in him, and I know that I'm surprised that that Madden didn't say he wanted to go up with Hurdle, because that's the guy that he's made a lot of comments to. But one last thing about Musgrove, why I thought that was blatant, is because he's a pitcher and he's expendable. And usually there's either Musgrove did it on his own, which is entirely possible, or there was some discussion about it. And that's the part that's where I thought, you know, that was kind of blatant, because they were giving up a pawn, not a, you know, a big chess piece if there was going to be people getting tossed. So you're right. In that particular series, there was enough brouhaha to last almost the whole season.
All right, so, you know, but it's made for an entertaining road trip. You must.
Without a doubt.
So, so I want to also talk about Jason Hayward, who had a great night last night. He had four hits last night. He had three hits in consecutive games. I mean, what's going on?
Well,
Chili Davis is doing a great
job. There's no doubt, and we'll talk about that in a minute, but I think Hayward might feel a little fire underneath him in regards to the fact that Zobrist is playing so well right now that Zobrist's bat has to stay in the lineup, and I think that Hayward, just by the fact that he struggles from an on-base perspective, is the odd man out. Schwarber's having a great year. Almora's playing very, very well. He's the best defensive player in the field right now. That's the other thing, too, is Hayward over the last couple of weeks has been uncharacteristically below average defensively. In fact, I saw him make a throw the other day. It was like, I've never seen you like missed a cutoff man like that. So I think to answer your question, I think Hayward may feel pressure right at this point. And
I think I think you're right. And he's made some good plays. Oh, yeah. He did throw a runner out at the plate they're sort of, you know, it's sort of it's both, but I'm really happy to see him hitting. And what's interesting now is what you're seeing is Baez and Russell, you know, those guys are alternating in and out to get Zobrist in the game. You know, and so Zobrist will play right, he'll play second, and then either Baez will move to short or Russell will play short. So it's kind of that's kind of the three players or the three positions that we're seeing the big movement.
Yeah, I will tell you, I disagree with that strategy. I would never take Baez out of the lineup ever. He's just too spectacular defensively, and I just think he is kind of an impatient hitter. But to me, Russell's struggling. He has little moments of flashes of playing very well. And then you see him do a bonehead stuff on defense. His throws sometimes are not so good. And then just hitting wise,
He's actually not hitting too badly. He's hitting in the 270s which is not too bad. And he does play solid defense, but I just think that the team, everybody contributes.
Yeah, right.
They've got a deep roster. You got to get these guys in the game and what's amazing is, with Baez kind of sitting out occasionally, he still leads the league and runs batted in, which is just it's bananas. All right, so Jose Quintana had a nice outing against the Mets. That's something that he can build on, and on the road he's been really good.
I love Quintana. Obviously, that trade with the White Sox is completely paid off for the Cubs at this point, even though the jury's still out on Etoy. And when he's going to come up, I don't understand the Sox playing as poorly as they are that they haven't called this kid up, or Eloy or whatever his name is.
Yeah. Eloy,
Quintana is just, you could make a case that he's the ace of the team right now, even though I know Lester would probably slap me for saying that. But I think, Quintana has just been a pleasant surprise. He's a young arm, and I think we're going to get really good production out of him over the next few years. And we got him at a great price. That was a great move by the Cubs.
It really was. So now Javi Baez drew his third unintentional walk of the season. This is his first since April 7th, a stretch of 183 plate appearances. And Joe Maddon, again, had a great line. He says, we forgot to get him the ball.
The game ball. it's funny, but it's also kind of like, Javi, if they said that about me, I would do something about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's doing something about it. He's hitting the crap out of the ball.
Right, true.
He's having a great time. I don't know. I mean, he does other things. Yeah, he doesn't walk a lot. But I don't think you can also – I mean, I think that a player can still be a good player and not necessarily have a really high on-base percentage.
Well, especially when you're as good as he is defensively. Like, he's a guy that could bat 150 as far as I'm concerned because he's such a wizard on defense.
No, you're right. You're right. And all right, but now let's talk about another Cubs player who's having an excellent season as a pinch hitter. Tommy LaStella got another pinch hit the other night. This guy is just – it's out of control. He's like 11 or 12 pinch hits. That's unbelievable.
I'm very excited for Tommy LaStella, and hopefully he's kind of matured a little bit because, remember, he kind of kicked his feet and said he was going to take his bat and ball and go home last year because he wasn't getting enough plate appearances. That really hasn't improved so much this season. However, he has improved and has grown as a player, which is great. And so when I was breaking down the stats earlier this morning, the Cubs are the fourth best team in the major leagues with pinch hitting. So, and he's a big reason why that is.
And so, and it also dovetails into the fact that you look at Albert Almora, he and LaStella, and now Zobrist, are 300. They're batting over 300. And this is something we haven't seen on this team, you know, since Madden took over, you know, since these players started coming up. We just don't see 300 hitters.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because, you know, I've been advocating about Elmora being the everyday center fielder for a couple of years now because of how great he is defensively. I really think he's one of the major league's best center fielders. However, he's done a great job. But yesterday, he had a terrible game at the plate. I mean, those pitchers made him look stupid all night long.
We're talking about Jacob DeGrom.
Right.
And then, you know, also he did drive in two runs with a double in the fifth.
Yes, he did. He did redeem himself. But I fell asleep. I missed that part of the game. But while I was watching it, he did not look so good up there. But none of the Cubs did yesterday.
Chris Bryant was one for eight. You know, I mean, it was tough. All right, so now you, Darvish, thinks the Cubs fans hate him.
Yeah.
You know, Tom, and I was worried about that. You know, I think, I'm worried about who hates me. Actually, this is kind of, I mean, it sort of reflects his psychological makeup. I don't think Cubs fans hate him. I think they hate the fact that he's not pitching well.
That's right.
You know, and he's unavailable.
Yeah, I'm still a fan. I mean, I don't love Darvish, but I like him as a friend. But I think that when you look at him versus Arrieta right now, certain Cub fans could become Darvish haters over the fact that Arrieta is still pitching. Actually, his ERA is a sterling 2.25, better than it was when he was on the Cubs last year. But I believe Darvish's part of his issue is that he pitched a lot of innings last year, pitched well into the postseason. I've seen this happen with other pitchers. I still think that the Cubs are winning without him, and we're going to talk about the unbelievable success of Mike Montgomery in a second here. You know, Darvish needs to get himself right, and if that means taking a month off, take a month off. I think Darvish is a tremendous talent. He's 6'5" and can throw six or seven different pitches, four strikes. I think he'll be just fine. The Cubs are doing very, very well without hardly any contribution from him. So I just say my opinion is give the guy a chance.
Yeah, give him a chance. I think he'll contribute again. I mean, it's got to take some time to get his head right. And Chris Jimenez will help, whisper in his ear.
Right.
And you know, I think it'll be fine. Now, you also you wrote in here that the Cubs are now tied with Boston for the best batting average in the major leagues at .266. And you believe this is largely due to the efforts of
There's no question about it. I think that Chili Davis, I don't know if they give awards, quite frankly, to assistant coaches. There's been some great ones. I can't remember the guy's name who was the pitching coach for the Braves in the 90s. That guy – That guy was a great coach. But anyways, John Malley, who was the former Cubs hitting coach, really took a lot of grief last year because the Cubs just were out of sorts offensively. Chili Davis is really, with the exception of the left, the fact that we lead the majors with the guys left on base, the Cubs have been attacking the baseball, which is great. They're not leading the league in strikeouts. They're kind of run of the mill in that department. You would think because of the fact that they're a little bit more free swinging these days that they would have a big increase in strikeouts, notwithstanding yesterday. That's not been the case overall. So Chili Davis has to get that credit, whether that's true or not, whether these players are just evolving and growing up and figuring it out. It doesn't matter. Davis is the face of it, and he's going to one that's going to get the credit. The thing that's interesting to me is that the Cubs are tied for the best batting average, and they're third in the majors in ERA.
Thank you, Jim Hickey.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And that to me spells world championship teams. When you have that kind of a number, and even though the Cubs are basically the seventh best team in the majors from a win-loss record, even though they're owed like four or five games, one of the reasons why they're down in the stats is because they're like the Yankees. They're four or five games behind everybody because of all the rainouts.
No, you're right, and you were saying that if this continues, you know, they'll make a long, deep playoff run, I think, which would be amazing, and maybe find themselves in the World Series again. Yeah. So, but anyway, all right. So last night's game was really interesting. Again, 14 innings against the Mets. It was 1-1 until the top of the 14th when the Cubs exploded for 6 runs and finally ended up winning 7-1. But there were 2 really great pitching performances. And the first one was by Mike Montgomery, who's coming in starting, you know, he's spot starting. He's starting in Yu Darvish's absence. And then a young reliever by the name of Luke Farrell also pitched 5 innings of shutout relief in
7 strikeouts,
which was just, yeah, which
it
was
really
brilliant.
Was.
I mean, it was really, really great game. And, the kind of game that I think builds confidence and really puts the Cubs kind of in the driver's
Agreed.
Seat, you
Agreed.
Know. So, all right. So let's move on to this date in baseball history. I want to begin with this. These are some famous things that happened this week. And on June 3rd, 1888, you'll love this, Tom, was the first publication of Ernest L. Thayer's poem, Casey at the Bat, in the San Francisco Examiner. And yeah, that's right. I'll spare everyone from me reading
right.
it. But he was embarrassed. He actually published it under the name Finn. He was embarrassed by what he considered to be a bad bit of verse, and he kept his identity secret until other people started coming forward and taking credit for it. And finally he said, hey, this is my poem. And it's a great
it
poem.
Really
it's
is.
One of the great American.
Also kind of woven into Americana over the years, from everything from being, you know, repeated numerous times in a baseball sense, but all the way through up until the Grateful Dead, who quoted in one of their most famous songs. So, yeah, it's a great poem, bottom line.
No, you're absolutely right. And, okay, so now we move on to May 31st, 1948. The Schenectady Blue Jays defeat the Amsterdam
nice,
Rugmakers
nice.
6-5 in 15 innings. Now, this is significant because the pitcher that day for Schenectady was a promising southpaw. He goes the distance, pitches all 15 innings, and his name is Tommy Lasorda.
Nice.
He strikes out 26
wow.
hitters, and he throws what he believes to be more than 300
wow.
pitches. So
well, that
kind,
explains
that
some things from a mental standpoint.
Yeah, it does. And all right. Last one I wanted to point out was May 31st, 1949, a year later, Charlie Lupica, a Cleveland resident, announces from a 20-foot platform atop a flagpole that he will remain until the Indians win another pennant or are eliminated from the race.
And have they checked in with,
this
they
is
checked
a year
in
after,
with him lately?
Yeah, exactly. And so Bill Veeck, who owned the team, he ended up giving him a 50-foot flagpole
nice.
As a souvenir. And he also gave him a
nice.
Brand new car, which
nice.
Was kind of nice. So. And I also wanted to close on a did you know. Now, the Dodgers kind of have the inside track on the Rookie of the Year award this year with Walker Buehler, starting pitchers, pitching really
yep.
well. It looks like he may be. Right now, he's the early favorite to win the award. If he does win, it would be the third straight time the Dodgers
wow.
have won the Rookie of the Year award. They've won the last 2. But if you go back, we've had a Rookie of the Year award since 1947. Mm-hmm. The Dodgers have won 17
right.
Rookie
right.
of the Years. That's 24
that's amazing.
Of the awards. And they've had a 4-year stretch and a 5-year
yep.
stretch, which is just out
right.
of control. You know, if they win next year, that's going to be 18 out of 71 possible rookie.
That,
of the
that's
awards,
amazing.
Which is
that's
just
amazing.
Crazy.
And the fact is, that's interspersed with very few World Series. That's so. But,
yeah,
but I think
really,
that speaks volumes
yeah.
to their scouting and minor league staff, which has always been top shelf.
Yeah, it's been top shelf going back to Branch Rickey, and and Jackie Robinson wins the first Rookie of the Year
yep.
award, and they won the first one, and they're going to win. They're going to have the last 3. All right, so it's been a great conversation as always, Tom. Let's wrap it up, I say. You got anything
I
more
do
to
know.
Add? All right. Well, if you have anything to add, and I mean by you, the listener, please email us at youareinthewheelhouse@gmail.com. Have a great
you
weekend,
too, man.
Tom.